Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 8, Continuous Improvement and Root Cause Racism. Think back to your first continuous improvement training. What did you learn about? Define, measure, analyze, improve, control, DMAIC? Or was it a lean training and you talked about single-piece flow and how to define waste? Did the topic of racism ever enter the conversation? Probably not. But the root causes of racism and the problems in the world for which racism appear to be a root cause are now hot topics in the continuous improvement community. My guests are Deandra Wardell and Mark Graben, who joined me to share the story of hashtag root cause racism. Deandra Wardell and Mark Graben, welcome to The Edges of Lean.
Thank you, Bella. It's so great to be here today with you and Mark.
Yeah, likewise, Bella. Thank you for the invitation. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast, and it's really nice to be a guest here today.
Well, thanks for coming. Today, we're talking about the work that you've been doing on hashtag root cause racism. And what I was hoping to do today was really get into some of the backstory behind what you've been doing, how the two of you came to work with each other, and where you see it going in the future. So Deandra, can I start with you and tell us a little bit of how did this all get started? Deandra Wardell is a visionary leader, problem solver, organizer, and motivational speaker. Her specialty is empowering and developing individuals and groups towards achieving their personal and professional goals. She also coaches those same people in achieving transformative change. Deandra has a diverse professional background. Her former roles include Chief Strategy Officer at the American College of Sports Medicine and Director of Performance Excellence for a global leader in the paper packaging industry. While working in the performance excellence space, she and her team led continuous improvement projects for more than 70 facilities in North America, Europe, and Asia. Deandra has also worked as a corporate trainer, project manager, banking manager, and has held various roles in operations management.
Absolutely. So it all got started in terms of my social media post. Historically, as it relates to Black Lives Matter, I would post and I would be more vocal on Facebook. So after the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, I was just really, really troubled. And I noticed that a lot of companies and organizations, you know, they were making their statements about, you know, Black Lives Matter, and different companies were talking about, you know, just the importance of recognizing diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I thought, you know, those statements were important, but I was like, you know, why do these things, you know, why does this behavior even exist? Why do we, you know, have to keep dealing with things like this? I was like, you know, it would be great if we could just get to the root cause. And so as I would post and be more vocal about, you know, just different Black Lives Matter type issues and topics, I would, in my post, with hashtag root cause racism. And so then when I would go over to LinkedIn and I would, you know, again, see the different statements from different companies, I was somewhat troubled by the fact that I really didn't see a lot of people from the lean community just being vocal about in their post and talking about what was going on. And so I decided that, you know, I perhaps needed to be more vocal on LinkedIn. And I had decided that, That would be my virtual street of protest. And so I started testing the waters. I shared an article where in summary it was talking about when your employees are returning to work. This was the Monday after George Floyd's murder, that just be sensitive to what they may be feeling. At the time, I was a vice president at the company where I worked. And just returning to work, I felt some apprehension, not a matter of a safety concern or anything like that, but the fact that, you know, I had Monday morning meetings that I needed to be smiling and pleasant and alert, and I just wasn't there. I was grieving. I was really heartbroken. And so if I felt that way, you know, I just can only imagine what other people might be feeling. And I was a bit nervous about making a post like that. I didn't know what it might do for future public speaking or keynote opportunities, or if I would lose followers or what have you. But then I determined, you know, no matter what, before I'm a Kata geek or a vice president or anything else, I'm a Black woman. And that for people who know me and respect me, I felt like they would hear my heart and my post. And so I started posting more on LinkedIn. What took me aback was some of the type of responses I received from other people in the continuous improvement community who weren't as kind or did not receive the post in the way in which it was intended. But what was encouraging is that other members from the Lean community, specifically the women in Lean, really rallied around the message that I was trying to share and let me know that it was okay, that, you know, the message that I was trying to get across, that LinkedIn was a proper platform to share those concerns and heighten that awareness. So it started with that initial post of me, and I believe on that particular post, even I ended it with the hashtag root cause racism.
So then what happened? How did Mark get involved in what you were doing?
Okay. So after that first post, and like I said, the support that I received from others in the Lean community, I felt, you know, more encouraged and empowered to continue posting. And there was another post that I shared. There was a list of the different microaggressions that Black people experience in the workplace. Anything from having their hair touched, or, you know, just different questions that can be asked that really shouldn't be asked. And they're forms of showing unconscious racial bias. And so when I post that article and share that article, I think I listed about 6 items that I had experienced to make it more personal. And there were two gentlemen from the Lean community, again, who questioned whether or not what I had experienced was even valid, and again, made some other unkind comments. And then Mark Graben made a comment. And to be honest, and I've shared this with Mark before, so it's not a surprise, I remember when I got the notification on my phone that Mark Graben has responded to your post, I thought, oh my goodness, please tell me that Mark is not like, you know, some of these other negative experiences that I had, because he's someone who, you know, I have a great deal of respect for. You know, I follow on different social media channels. I've heard him speak. You know, I have his books. And I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that his comment was addressing the other gentleman, you know, not telling them what to do, but just, hey, take a moment to hear what it is the author's trying to say. And as a result of that, you know, he received some unkind responses, but he didn't back down. And then he messaged me, and we had just an offline conversation about, you know, his observations. And I didn't realize it, but he had noticed the first post. And then from there, I'd like to turn it over to Mark and pretty much share his perspective.
Yeah, I want to hear Mark's perspective and what led you to that comment, Mark.
Mark Graben is an internationally recognized consultant, author, professional speaker, and entrepreneur. He is also a senior advisor for the technology company Kynexus. You might know Mark as the lead blogger and podcaster at www.leanblog.org.
He is most recently the author of Measures of Success, React Less, Lead Better, Improve More. Mark's other books include the Shingo Award-winning book, Lean Hospitals, and Healthcare Kaizen, also a Shingo recipient, and the Executive Guide to Healthcare Kaizen. He was creator and editor of the anthology, Practicing Lean.
You know, first off, I mean, you know, I'll comment and, you know, for what it's worth, apologize. I feel like I am very late to activism or speaking up or speaking out when it comes to issues of racial injustice. And, you know, after George Floyd's murder and other Ahmaud Arbery and other cases, and, you know, just reflecting and thinking about, I know this is not a new problem, but what is going on? And, you know, then seeing Deandra's posts, you know, made me think, you know, and what can I do to be respectful and to try to be helpful as a white man? And so, you know, I commented, and I don't, you know, and I don't view, I mean, I didn't feel like, you know, I was wading into politics. I felt like I was supporting another member of the Lean community, meaning Deandra. I wasn't happy to see, I was disappointed with some of those comments. I basically, you know, I just felt like it was, I hoped it was appropriate to say, you know, I hear you. I'm not going to be dismissive of what you were saying, Deandra. I think, you know, these are questions, I mean, you know, around, you know, your show and the theme, The Edges of Lean. Some might say talking about root causes of racism or wading into these conversations in a workplace or an online forum is at the edges of lean. I would propose it's at the core of lean. Mm-hmm. Respect for people, that it's inappropriate for somebody like myself, a white middle-aged male of all sorts of unearned privilege, to be dismissive of anybody else's experiences. We need to listen. We need to understand and respect other people's perspectives. And, you know, I think that's true in a workplace. We wouldn't want a plant manager to be dismissive of a report about a piece of broken guarding on a machine out in the shop floor. That wouldn't be lean leadership. A lean leader would go and see and ask why and show respect and focus on safety. I wouldn't want a hospital CEO to be dismissive about complaints of patient safety risks. And we shouldn't be dismissive of other people's experiences. And Deandra and I have talked a lot, and I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, Deandra, we've only really known each other 4 months, but it seems longer than that, right? We've had a lot of private Zoom discussions and, you know, just learning from each other's perspectives. And, you know, I appreciate that. And I really appreciate the opportunity to try to collaborate on not just what can we do to use some of the mindsets and methods of lean to create better workplaces, but we're people first and foremost, mm-hmm. before we're kata geeks or lean coaches or whatever. I think it's appropriate. I've been trying to listen and learn. I've been trying to amplify the voices of others in a way that, you know, I'm hoping is helpful.
Mark, when you made that first comment on Deandra's post, did you stop and think before you did it? Did you have any concern that people might see you differently, or were you able to just go and do it? And the reason I'm asking is because Deandra on one of your posts, I can't remember which one, I remember one of the unkind comments, and I made a response to that unkind mm-hmm. comment. I remember thinking for about 25-30 minutes, you know, before I hit the send button on the comment, because I was concerned that not so much that it was wading into politics, which you talked about, Mark, but that it was, the conversation was, had already headed and was going to head in a direction where people were going to start kind of spewing memes at each other, you know, and phrases that they've heard rather than really listening. I didn't want to contribute to that. And and that partly was coming out of my space of being like, I'm trying to find my way. What is the right way to be on LinkedIn? And I think you've been a long time. What was the moment like for you, or the moments leading up to?
I don't remember going through any great back and forth, other than it feels like I felt compelled to comment. It felt like the right thing to do, and that was the lens that I was kind of thinking back for some months ago. But I think speaking up is, I read something interesting recently. I talked about the risk of speaking up. There's also a risk of not speaking up. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't speak up, what do people think about that?
Well, I think it was great that you spoke up, and I think DeAndre, you do too. What happened after that?
So, Bella, I'm glad you asked Mark that question, because questions that I've asked Mark is, like I said, I followed him. We followed each other. We were connected, and he'd never commented or liked anything. And so I was really curious as to, what motivated him to comment on that post. And just like he just shared with you, that was exactly what he shared with me. He just felt like it was the right thing to do. And there wasn't a long, tedious thought process. He saw an issue and he wanted to address it. But what meant a great deal to me, and this is, really part of what Root Cause Racism is about, it's taking the time to listen, to understand, and find one small thing you can do to make an impact. Because, systematic racism or systemic racism and structural racism, it's over 400 years in the making. We're not going to get rid of this overnight. And, what Mark did after he made that comment, he sent me an email, where he shared his experience, and pretty much like he's already explained, of, how he wanted to be more involved, how he wanted to become more involved, and, trying to understand what he could do from his perspective. He acknowledged his privilege. And I remember as I was reading his email, tears were just rolling, because it was, all throughout his message, I felt like I was being heard. And then I was given an opportunity to see another vantage point, to understand, something from a white man's perspective, a white man with privilege. And then the other thing that he did, he didn't just end with a comment and, the kind things he said in the email. He opened his blog to me and he said, if you're interested in writing a blog, and I think he even recommended that I could have some others join me. And what was odd about that is I was at a point trying to figure out what could be done from a lean perspective to address the issue we experience with racism. Because, I feel like the methodology and what we practice and what we know within a manufacturing walls and office walls, why can we not take that to the street and address the problems that we see that are taking place with our communities that's rooted in racism? Why can't we take what we know and get to the root causes of the issues that racism brings and come up with some countermeasures to start addressing those? And so, I responded to him. I said, it's odd that you mentioned that. I have an idea. Let me get back with you. And he said, okay. And so after that, that's when I reached out to you and Karen and other members of Women in Lean. And I thought it was also important to bring in people who are not necessarily from the Lean community or continuous improvement background, because I wanted that to represent that we need a cross collaboration of people working to address this issue. And so that was represented with that first group. So when I came back to talk to Mark, I appreciated his generosity, but I was afraid for him. And we had a conversation about potential risk. You're out here supporting, in essence, we're talking about racism, supporting Black Lives Matter, you know, you're going to have this Black woman, you know, taking over your blog, you know, for a week, you could potentially lose followers. You could potentially lose business. And the other thing is, I was afraid that he could be targeted. I was concerned about his safety. And so I raised all those concerns to him, and I'll let him, you know, speak to the decision that he made.
Well, and I'll go back a little bit first. So, you know, when, you know, say, you know, the universe or LinkedIn's algorithm brought me and Deandra together for a reason here. You know, I had been reading or had been seeing, you know, a lot of times on social media, a big consumer brand, which admittedly I am not, but, you know, would do, you know, a social media takeover and allow, you know, social messages and other people's voices to be heard on that platform and with those followers. And so I was, you know, I thought, well, I could do something similar. I prefer to use the term handover, you know, because it was my choice to, you know, Deandra wasn't taking anything. It's kinder language to offer that. And I'm glad that she did. But yeah, I mean, I remember these conversations and I appreciate Deandra, you know, looking out for me and of course, you know, thinking about what I would experience through this. You know, a couple of thoughts. I mean, going back, as I remember the conversation, I think I was saying something effective. Well, if I'm made to feel a little bit uncomfortable, that's nothing compared to the way people unlike me are made to feel uncomfortable on a daily basis. So, I, you know, I'm a big boy. I was signing up for that. You know, thinking of what happened after the fact, I only think of three or four cases where there was some sort of critical reply or message sent to me as a result of participating in some of this. You know, one of the messages was sort of along the lines of, well, topics like these are not why I come to your blog. And I'm sick of hearing about all of this everywhere. And, you know, he was kind of telling me, you know, hey, stick to lean. As I, you know, I blogged about in the second series of our blog, you know, athletes get told stick to sports, doctors get told stay in your lane. I'm like, well, I'm not going to, it's my blog. I'm going to write about what I want to write about. I'm going to share it with whoever I want to share it with. And, you know, I think like, hey, you know, if you want a refund, I'll give you a full refund of the $0 that you pay to read this content. You know, it's, and it, so if I lose followers, I'm like, okay, fine. That's not why I do this. If a potential client says, well, I'm not going to work with Mark because he's speaking up on these issues. And I'm like, all right, fine. Better to discover that. I mean, like, that's probably not someone I would really want to work with. So not to sound cavalier or too privileged about it. But you know, I wasn't really concerned about consequences. And again, like, I think there are consequences of not speaking up. What do people assume about you then if you're not speaking up in this day and age? And a lot of times this gets framed as politics. I think look, this is about civil rights, human rights, fairness, respect. To me, that's not politics. If others are going to frame it that way, I guess I understand that, but you know, I think it's too important to not try to speak up or not try to be helpful and, you know, let other voices shine. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of this, look, so I can learn and better understand. I'm not saying I'm better than other white males. Again, like, I'm behind the curve. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to catch up. I'm trying to be an ally when I wasn't outwardly actively doing that in the past. So anyway, sort of rambling there, but you know, it's a time, you know, to try to be helpful to others. And that's one thing I've been reflecting on and thinking about this year. And, you know, so, you know, again, like nobody, you know, people weren't as nasty as Deandra or I might've feared, but, you know, the other comment I was going to make, and this is part of my learning this year, when we talk about systemic racism. I think what puts this, again, not at the edges of lean, but within the core of lean, is that systems drive behaviors. We would recognize this to be true in a factory or in a hospital or other workplaces. I think it's true within society. So one of the critical emails that I got came from somebody who said, I'm sick and tired of people like you saying that everybody is racist. I'm like, well, gosh, it's way more complicated than that, right? Saying that there is, recognizing that there is undeniable systemic racism in the United States does not mean that all Americans are bad people. It does not mean that all white men are bad people. But systems that we're born and raised in and live in drive behavior. And I think exploring those systems and the historical roots of those systems is worth thinking about, because otherwise we're just, before we go throwing out random countermeasures, it's better to frame the problem, to understand the problem, and to understand some of the root causes.
And I think one of the things that we struggle with this stuff is that in lean, I think we're often trained, or we expect to go for something that we can measure, right? So we want to get to the thing that we can measure, so that when we put a countermeasure in place, we can see, does the measure change? And right now, even the measurement around what does systemic racism mean, or what's happening that may be driven by racism, the measures are actually contentious at the moment. And we have sort of had that political framework around that makes it hard for us to even say, are we measuring it? Can we measure it? And when it's something, DeAndre, when you're talking about microaggressions, I mean, you're not going to keep a wall chart and, put a tick on the chart every time somebody asks to touch your hair. So.
Can I say two quick things on measures? Real quick. So one is, one thing that I can measure and I have control over is looking at who I invite to be a guest on a podcast or in a webinar series. That is measurable. How many women are represented? How many people of color are represented? So something like that is measurable.
Absolutely, yeah.
I also step back, though. I think of my roots before lean, for what it's worth, is with W. Edwards Deming, who often said some of the most important things are unmeasurable, but we have to manage them anyway. So how do we measure fairness? How do we measure respect? How do we measure justice? We have to, might be tough to measure, but we have to work at it anyway.
Exactly. So you both talked about the blog posts. DeAndre, tell us about the first series. I'm hoping most people have read them, and you can find them if you go to rootcauseracism.com. Rootcauseracism.com, and you can see all the blog posts. So tell us about the first blog series and the second blog series.
Sure. So with the first blog series, our goal was to, explore the systems of where, structural racism is rooted. And, the categories that were created, we wanted to look at, in the community, how we interact with one another in education, business, healthcare, the government, and the arts. And, we asked each person who wrote a blog to share their experiences where they felt comfortable, but to stay close to those themes about, maybe pointing to some of the root causes within those areas of systemic racism, and then offer one small thing, one small countermeasure, one thing that a person could do to address those issues. And the series kicked off with my blog, which was, about one small thing. And then it concluded with a webinar where we asked a number of the authors, Bella, we were very fortunate to have you on the panel as well, to share some of the highlights and key takeaways from those blogs, and offer, a list of actions or calls to action that people could take. And again, the goal was to heighten that awareness and create a forum or create a space where we could start talking. Because oftentimes we do, and I've really recognized, you know, or have a better understanding of even my own biases as a result of my interactions with, you know, people like Mark Graben and other friends of mine who happen to be white men in the lean community, like Mike Jones, and getting their perspective. And, you know, I say this all the time, it's going to take all hands on deck, collaborating, working together. It's really true. And that was a very powerful, it was a very brilliant, it was a very impactful series. And I say that is because of the collaboration. Different things that the author shared, the information, the really incredible research that was performed, and then the epiphanies. And I remember that there was one comment that Mark made. As a matter of fact, within that series, he did a podcast with Dr. Randall Pinkett about his book, Black Faces and White Spaces. And I remember during listening to that podcast, and Mark made the comment about how uncomfortable he felt, you know, referring to himself as a white man. And I thought, well, why would he feel uncomfortable saying that? He is a white man, you know. And so he and I think had an offline conversation, maybe about 20 or 30 minutes, where I was really trying to wrap my head around that. And so, you know, as a result of conversations like that, then I began to think about, you know, how is it that we can create a space, again, you know, where people can feel comfortable sharing their reservations and concerns and talk through them and gain understanding. And that was part of what sparked the idea for When Brothers Meet at Gemba. And I'll pause because I, you know, want to give Mark an opportunity to share, you know, his experience for that first blog series as well.
Well, yeah, I was just going to elaborate. I mean, I remember the conversation and, you know, the podcast about just not, like, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Like, it was just not, it's factually correct, as Deandra said. And, you know, but I just did not outwardly ever use the language of I am a white man or I am a white person. And I think part of that, that privilege is, you know, as I talked with Dr. Pinkett about, and Randall was the first and only Black winner on the show, The Apprentice. So we were talking, and, you know, I think part of that privilege is, or worse, is to say, well, I'm not a white person, I am a person, and everybody else requires a modifier to that. I think that's something to step back and reflect on. And you know, we talked about in the podcast again, like, to, I don't think of something as white places, I think of them as places. And it's very rare. You know, one thing I've listened to, you know, the perspectives of others, it is very rare in personal, professional circles to be the only white person in the room or to be the only man in the room. Sometimes in healthcare, I'm the only man in the room. And there may have been one or two instances, you know, with healthcare client organizations I work with, I might have been the only white person in the room, but that's really rare, right? And that's, I don't think creates a discomfort or, you know, I didn't feel like there's discrimination against me, right? So, you know, I think it's just important to think about people who do feel like they're being treated badly or judged when they're the only woman or the only person of color in a setting. It's hard for me to understand. There's not a direct parallel of like, well, no, I mean, sometimes I'm the only white guy in the room. That's not the same thing. Or if somebody was being prejudiced against me or making assumptions about me as a white person, that doesn't affect me the same way. That is not systemic, harmful white supremacy, to use that language. And that's language I had not used at all before this year. And just the other thought around, you know, white people is that it seems like people who use that phrase very aggressively are people who are, let's say, in white supremacist organizations. And that is not me. And so for me to say, you know, like, white. Just, I don't, it's not a bad thing, but that word gets used by people who are aggressively, intentionally racist.
With the implication that white is somehow better or more deserving of the privileges in society.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, kind of, just kind of more comfortable with stating facts are facts. I'm a white man, and we're not all the same any more than all Black women are the same. You know, Deandra and I have had a lot of conversations where, you know, she'll say, I'm not speaking on behalf of all Black women, and I'm trying not to ask her to. She can speak as Deandra, but she does have perspectives that are shared, as I've heard about, from her and other Black people and other women. And, you know, I'm trying to, again, like, I think it's important to listen and understand and not be dismissive.
Mm-hmm. Deandra, I remembered at the time of that first blog series and of the webinar, actually seeing a comment pop up where somebody said, well, why aren't there any men here apart from Merck, who was hosting the webinar? And Merck, you had men participate because you had the Randall Pinkett webinar, and you also had a really great podcast with Christopher Chapman and his wife, both of which were terrific. But people were looking around and saying, well, where are the men, right? And Deandra, was that part of the instigation for When Brothers Go to Gemba, or was it more than that?
Well, actually, it was more than that. There were men who were involved. There were men who were behind the scenes who were providing a great deal of support. I've already mentioned Mike Jones. Another person was Jeff Welch. The reason why there were so many women who were part of the first blog series is there was a time crunch. You know, from ideation to execution, it was a 3-week process. It was a very quick turnaround. And as a way to say thank you and to elevate the voices of those women who were very vocal and you know, were helpful on that first post that I shared on LinkedIn, I wanted to use this as an opportunity to provide a bigger forum for them to share some of the messages and some of the learnings in a blog. And so that was the design. But at that time, I had in mind that I wanted to do another blog series that included men. And especially that was the case, like I said, from what I learned in that first blog series and from what I've learned as I've been working with Mark. And I would even say that we're not only colleagues, we're friends. And a number of the, we have some very rich conversations about what is going on with race relations, not only in America, but around the world. And I have those similar conversations, you know, with the other gentlemen who I've mentioned. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could have these conversations in a public format and do another blog series? So I knew it was going to be called When Brothers Meet, because when brothers get together, and the whole reason I wanted to refer to it as brothers is because, you know, we're not at odds with one another. You know, if we can sit down and be like family who gather at a table, and we may not see things the same way, but at least gain an understanding and figure out what we can do to make things better. But the at Gemba piece came later because that was really important, you know, to talk about what happens when you go to Gemba, you know, that you go to see, you want to gain an understanding as why things happen the way they are. How is it that these, you know, systems have developed the way that they have? And that was really important to have those discussions. And then, you know, the ask why and show respect. So as a result of the conversations that I've been having with, you know, different men in the continuous improvement community and outside of the community, I'm also currently taking a class at the University of Akron in Ohio called Racial Equality in the Law. So that really opened my eyes even more to how deeply rooted racism is embedded in a number of our systems. And then with the election coming up, and you know, and I see all of the just the debate and the just the sparring back and forth about what's going on in politics, instead of really talking about matters of substance that will help to educate people on which way to vote. So I wanted to string all of that together. What can happen when men come together in a virtual GEMBA to talk about the historical implications to why race relations are the way they are, how voting ties into that, and what's one small thing that we all can do to make things better. And with the second blog series, all of the participants completely knocked the assignment out of the park. I felt it was an extremely powerful, very eye-opening series. And then to show that balance, Mark and I invited women to participate with a Plan and Vote for Kindness webinar. One, to support Karen Ross with the great work that she's doing with the Love and Kindness Foundation. And she currently has a project called Vote for Kindness. So we wanted to tie that in again with Lean, talking about Plan, Do, Check, Act, and how you can follow the PDCA cycle to develop a voting plan.
And those blogs were outstanding. And Mark, actually starting with yours about not staying in your lane, I found that was very powerful. And Deanna, one of the things that you know that surprised me with the first blog series when you invited me to participate was, and I said to you, because when you invited me, I said, I'd rather give the space, if it were, to a Black woman. And you said no. And the same thing with the second series, that it was multiracial. Mm-hmm. So can you just talk a little bit more about that and the intentionality behind that?
Right. So that's just how I have always operated. I'm very intentional to make sure that there is representation of both men and women and people of different ethnicities. And so because again, something as complex as racism, Black people, we cannot solve it ourselves. And it is going to take, everyone getting involved, doing their part to, just really chip away at dismantling, this 400 year long monstrous, structure. And so the other thing too is, among the people who I interact with, I regularly talk to people from different backgrounds, and I value the perspective that they bring. And, Bella, you and I have collaborated on a number of things, and specifically going back to that first post I made on LinkedIn about Black Lives Matter. Not only were you very engaged in trying to help the gentleman perhaps see a different view, you even messaged the gentleman offline to have further conversations. And you weren't attacking, you were trying to learn, or you were trying to share and provide teachable moments. And as a result of that, I believe it was a breakthrough took place, and that person decided to delete their comment. And so, if I had shared the same message you had shared, I may have had the same outcome, I may not have, but I think people coming from different backgrounds, but from different perspectives, may reach an audience in a different way. And so it's always important, like I said, to have opportunities for different peoples of different backgrounds to be able to share their voice. And, something else that was shared by some of the participants who were white women had said that, they wanted to get involved and they didn't know how. And as a result of participating in the blog series, they felt like they were pulled off the sidelines. I received that same type of feedback from Black people as well. And it just, it just felt good to be a part of something that's bigger than all of us, but making an impact that will, be part of the legacy that we leave for future generations.
I think that's really important because, one of the things that people can sort of misconstrue from all of this is that the only thing to do is to demonstrate. And demonstrations are important, right? But many of us have other skills that we can bring to bear. And so, Mark, what you did you know, by offering your skill and your space to Deandra was incredibly important. Deandra, what, I think what you're really talking about is allyship, right? Is this term allyship? And Mark, you use the word ally, and I'm just wondering, Mark, what does that word mean to you now?
I think I'm still figuring that out. I think being an ally, I mean, it's interesting, you know, Deandra saying Black people can't solve this alone. You know, a lot of the structures of systemic racism were clearly created by white people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people get very defensive or, you know, like, well, I didn't do that 400, 500 years ago, going back to Portugal and the early days of the colonial United States. And no, I didn't do that. But what am I doing to speak out about the effect of that today? So I think being an ally for one means, I mean, I, you know, try to ask what is helpful rather than trying to assume what is helpful, what adds value to the cause, if you will. I've been willing to use my voice, but I, you know, I've been trying to make sure that I've been doing more listening and more sharing of platforms, and trying to help share an audience, more so than trying to say, like, you know, when people say, well, you should stay in your lane because you're not an expert in any of this. Well, I'm not speaking as an expert. I can speak as a person. And, you know, people who want to post unkind, untoward, combative things on LinkedIn, they have a voice, they can use it, but other, you know, but using your voice has consequences. Somebody may decide they dislike me and tune me out as a result. Okay, fine. The same thing happens in reverse. There are some people, I'm not going to name names here. There are some people who I had looked up to in the lean community who I have been sorely disappointed with. That's my right. You know, so anyway, back to the question of trying to be an ally. Think, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, we're all in this together. There are some who say, hey, white people, stay out of this. You end up making it all about yourselves. I'm not, you know, don't be, you know, don't try to be the white savior or whatever. And, you know, I think if we're working together and, you know, look to friends like Deandra and others to say, hey, if I think I'm being helpful and I'm not, please call me on it. Please pull the end on cord, if you will. And help me learn. I'm trying my best, and, you know, trying as an ally, I may sometimes do or say the wrong thing, and I'll try to learn from that.
Deandra.
You know, I'd like to add something, and this is the one thing that Mark and I typically, we don't argue, but if we were going to argue, I think it would be about this topic. I'm very vocal in showing my appreciation for Mark. You know, he talked about, you know, white people shouldn't make it all about themselves, or he's not trying to make it all about himself, or come off as a, you know, the savior of the day or whatever, a white savior, to use the term that he just shared. But, you know, and what I see in Mark is a great example of what allyship is, you know, first of all, he listens with an intent to learn. And like I said, we really have some deep conversations, sometimes, you know, different microaggressions or even straight out racism that I experience. I'm able to talk to Mark with that without any judgment or without him saying, are you sure you're not making this up or imagining it? He'll just listen. Then the other thing too is him speaking out. And, you know, so with not only participating in the blog series, but even with his social media post, you know, he is providing an example of how powerful his voice is. And as a result of the different things he's saying, he's creating safer spaces for people like me to do the work that I'm doing. And then not only that, he doesn't only listen to learn and speaks up, but he demonstrates allyship. It's an action. And one of the things that he did immediately after the first blog series and at the conclusion of the first webinar, he secured the domain for Root Cause Racism and wanted to make sure that whatever I saw happening with Root Cause Racism in the future, you know, that I would have that domain. I didn't ask him to do that. He didn't have to do that. That was extremely kind. And then not only that, he continues to be involved and provide support, not only for me, but for other people, again, for us to elevate our voices, for us to do this work. And so, of course, speaking up is important, but going back to what the theme of that first blog series, One Small Act, and all of these different things that he's doing, he may not see them as a big deal, but they're huge. And as a result of, you know, some of his social media posts about where he stands, other white men who have been silent, other white men from the lean community, just retweeting his tweets or sharing his posts and adding comments, you know, helps to push the cause, you know, forward even more, step by step, tweet by tweet. And, so there's a number of ways that we can all get involved. And Bella, like you mentioned, you know, I think the protests and demonstrations are fine but there is a number of different ways that we can protest and that we can demonstrate and we can elevate our voices. And the work that Mark is doing and continues to do is a great example of that.
And I'll just, we haven't fought about it, but I get uncomfortable or I'm like, time spent talking about me is time not spent talking about the problem statement. So I appreciate your kind words, Deandra, about countermeasures and actions that I've taken. But yeah, I appreciate what you say, but I don't like to spend too much time on it.
And I agree. But again, you know, sometimes when people are unsure what to do, seeing a model or an example of what can be followed, you know, you're helping to provide that. And so, you know, I don't say these things to embarrass you or put you on the spot, but the things that you see as small, they're impactful. And that's my opinion and I'm sticking to it.
Please do.
As I bang my hand on the desk.
All right, I'm gonna be like one of those debate moderators and say, all right, 2 minutes each, what's next? And Mark, we'll go with you first and then Deandra, you can wrap it up for us.
What comes next? This episode is being published in the future. Yeah. It's gonna be published after November 3rd.
Yes, after the election.
So listeners will realize that we're speaking to you from the past, and it may seem like a long time ago, being October 26th. What's going to happen? We're going to have to continue listening and learning. We're going to have to continue taking small steps, as Deandra puts it. I always smile when she says, I have an idea, because she does quite often. And so, what was that?
I said, I know just what you mean.
Yeah. So, you know, I was happy to hand over the blog temporarily, but, you know, I thought it was important for Deandra to own something here and not just be borrowing, and to help her build on this rootcauseracism.com site, you know, something that I'm happy to continue being involved in. And I'm just, you know, excited to see where it's going to go, because I had this small idea back in June. Hey, I'll hand over the blog. Well, Deandra had a great vision on top of that small idea. So I don't know what's to come, but I know Deandra's got ideas and it's going to go great places.
Okay. So typically that's how quite a few of our conversations and chats start out. I'll say, so Mark, I have an idea. Listen to this.
Yeah.
So to the people who are tuning in to this podcast, we have an idea. And when I say we, that's Mark, I include Bella, I include all of those who have participated in the Root Cause Racism blog series to date. And that's to take rootcauseracism.com to the next level. The goal for that website is to create a community where we can all come and we can all share our ideas and share the one small things that we're doing to spark other small things that are being done. Long-term, we have some really incredible visions. Right now I'm working with a team to develop the Root Cause Racism nonprofit. And as a result of that, you know, we're gonna continue to take the one small step, but we're gonna take some bigger steps. Well, we're really going to primarily be focused on education and healthcare and take what we've been learning in the blogs and in the webinars and in the podcasts and our one-off discussions and really having a significant impact on the community. And when I think about the future state of what root cause racism will do for this world, I really get excited, and it makes my heart skip a beat because, you know, together we are going to create the change that we want to see. And that is a world that is free of racism.
Wow, thank you.
The ideal state is far off, but the target state of being better than this current state. Those steps forward will move us in the right direction. And, you know, there's this question, like with Lean, when is incremental improvement or Kaizen helpful? And when do we need, to use the Japanese word, kaikaku, or more radical step function change? Some would call that, you know, the difference between continuous improvement and breakthrough improvement. We probably need both.
Right.
And, you know, how I'm in a position, you know, to be more patient, because the issues and injustices do not directly affect me. And so I can understand if some people say, hey, we need more breakthrough and we need larger step function improvements to move us toward that ideal state. That's one of the things I'm still trying to get my head around. How do we find that balance? Incremental improvement versus larger leaps. Mm-hmm. We need both, I think.
I agree. And from my perspective, there's the only way I can describe this is I have a sense of urgency around making those bigger breakthrough steps, you know, and because I always, whenever someone is murdered, I always get concerned about, could it be me next, or could it be one of my family members? Could it be one of my loved ones? And so any and everything I can do to prevent that from happening, I want to do that. And I'm very thankful for, you know, my colleagues. I'm thankful for you, Belle. I'm thankful for you, Mark, who are joining in this work and are helping to identify the one small things and then those bigger breakthroughs, so that we can, like I said, create the world that we want to see.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for bringing us on that journey, DeAndre. And thank you, both of you, Mark Craven and DeAndre Wardell, for taking this trip, not to the edges of Lean, but to the center of Lean.
Thank you, Bella.
Thank you, Bella.
This is Bella Engelbart, and I'd like to thank DeAndre Wardell and Mark Craven for being my guests on The Edges of Lean. You can find DeAndre at www.deandrewardell.com. Note the E at the end of Wardell, and Mark at www.leanblog.org or at Kinexus. We all urge you to follow the hashtag RootCauseRacism on social media and visit the website RootCauseRacism.com. What is your one small thing to act on or to do differently to address racism? How might your continuous improvement practice advance equity? Please join me in exploring more of The Edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbart. This is a Lean for Humans production.